Blog Talk Radio.
Less Detail, the podcast, on a Saturday night, December 14th, 2013. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We got all your picks coming up, NFL week number 15 on the horizon tomorrow afternoon and evening, and of course Monday Night Football. Before we start, we have to talk about a little bit about Thursday night's action, not so much about the game itself, which is kind of boring, but about the result in which Jason picked the Chargers to cover the spread over the Denver Broncos, a 10.5-point spread, and the Chargers went ahead and won the game straight up, which after all that talk that Jason was doing about his Thursday night record being so bad, that actually wound up giving Jason the win over me in Thursday night records this year, 7-6. So, Jason, not only are you kicking my ass for the whole season, but now also you win the Thursday night battle.
Oh, I knew I wasn't having a good year on Thursday nights. I just didn't realize that you were having a worse year. So, I like I said before we went on the air, maybe I'm just holding myself to a higher standard, but I must have gone on a run later in the season on Thursdays, because there was a point where it felt like every pick I made on a Thursday night was just a loser, especially when we disagreed early on. It seemed like I was giving you a game. Excuse me. It felt like I was giving you a game every week for a while. But, of course, that could just be my perception. But I will gladly take my Thursday night points championship. That counts for something?
I did go on a slight run where I won a couple from you early on, but after that, we kind of alternated back and forth, actually, as it turned out. And then, like I said, in the end, this past Thursday night, when the Chargers decided to come out and play and the Broncos decided not to because I finally picked them, that's when you went ahead and won over me. Yes, the Thursday night picks championship goes to you. I'm sure you and Jimbo are proud of yourselves.
I would like to say a little something about that game, but I will save that for the VIP after show here. I don't want to go on for too long because we've got a lot of picks to make today.
We've got 15 games left to pick for week 15. We start with our three highlight games. We start with the New England Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. The way New England trashed Miami in their first meeting of the season, where Miami had a 2-touchdown lead at halftime, came out and just got destroyed by the Patriots. You'd have thought maybe the Patriots would have gone on from that point and put the Dolphins away and stored the AFC East title away for good, but that's not quite the case. Miami's three games back with three to go. There's a sliver of a chance they can still come hunt down the Patriots and win the division. And, of course, New England losing the stud tight end Rob Gronkowski last week for the rest of the season gives Miami even more hope that they can come through and get that done. So Miami at 7-6, hosting New England at 10-3. New England, the slight 1-point road favorite at Miami. Jason, who you got?
I've got to go with New England here. Ryan Tannehill has had a history of coming up small in big games this year, and I think New England is renting a little space in Miami's head, especially after the way that they came out and just trashed them after halftime in that last game. Miami came out after halftime, and then you pointed this out very well about how Miami came out. They're jacked up. They're in Foxborough. They are just putting it to the Patriots, and they are just fired up and ready to go. And the Patriots just came out after halftime looking like they just had to go to work. They came out looking like they've been there, done that. They're just going to come out and they're just going to roll these guys up. It's a 1-point line, so in effect, it's basically just a straight-up pick. And I don't think that Miami has the the intestinal fortitude or the heart to last a full 60 minutes and come out with a win against New England. They'll find a way to wither in the spotlight, especially Ryan Tannehill, like I said, in almost every case where he's had a big spot has come up really, really small.
Yeah, I can't believe Miami's in contention still because of how the whole, you know, Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin thing shook down. I thought Miami would have eliminated themselves from playoff contention at this point, but they've somehow rallied and put together a nice little streak here, and they find themselves at 7-6, and they have another shot. They thought they had New England beat the first time. They got another shot if they want to take advantage of New England's shortcomings and beat them this time. I'm going to take Miami to get it done and do it this time. The way the season's going, you know, picking against you, I'm going to wind up going 0-2 with the Fish against New England, but I'm going to go with them anyway. They had them beat in Foxborough. There's no disputing that, and they just gagged it up. But there's just too many injuries for New England to keep overcoming and keep overcoming. I understand that Tom Brady has found a way to be very professional, you know, ignoring his temper tantrums and screaming fits. He then gets back under center and becomes very professional and finds a way to just move his team down the field, get the yardage that he needs, get the touchdowns that he needs, and keep it moving. But there's just too much going on the injury report as far as the potential pass catchers for New England. You got Gronkowski, you got Aaron Dobson's not going to play, you got Kenbrell Tompkins who's not going to play. Basically, it's just a war of attrition. It's why I'm taking Miami to get it done over New England. There's just too many weapons that are going to be missing for Tom Brady to go into Miami, a renewed Miami, and get that victory tomorrow. Miami has got to be fired up. They've got to be ready for this game. And I just got to think they're going to come out and put it to New England for four quarters this time the way they should have the first time, not just for two quarters or two and a half quarters. I have been so desperate to find new information, to find new angles to try to win picks over you, Jason, that I've gone even deeper into the stats now. So profootballfocus.com, they have three things to watch, three things to focus on for every single game, and I have not been checking that out all year. I checked it out this week. I got a little something, a little nugget for every game, and for this New England-Miami game, they gave me this wonderful nugget. New England this season without Gronk, less than 21 points per game, and those seven games that they did have Gronk, 32 points per game. I think he made a little bit of a difference for New England, and I think his presence is going to really, really be felt starting tomorrow and also into the playoffs for New England. On to our second highlight game of the week. We go down to Big D, where the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys will do battle, and this could have been a much bigger game if Aaron Rodgers would have been able to be cleared by the doctors and get out there, but that's not going to happen. So Green Bay will once again send Matt Flynn out on the field to quarterback the pack against the Cowboys. And the last time we saw the Cowboys, they were getting destroyed by the Chicago Bears on Monday night. However bad the Bears defense looked, the Cowboys looked worse. The Cowboys looked like the worst defense in the league. And despite that, they're still a 6.5-point favorite over Matt Flynn and the Green Bay Packers this week. And I am going to split the difference, so to speak. I think Dallas will win this game, but I think Green Bay will find a way to stay within 6.5. It's just so hard to imagine Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys putting it together in December and blowing a team out that's actually playing for something. Now, if Green Bay was officially eliminated from playoff contention, maybe it'd be different. Maybe I would think that, you know, with Green Bay wouldn't have any motivation. Maybe Dallas could come through with a big victory. But Green Bay is going to be out there once again playing for one more week, trying to extend the season one more week to give Aaron Rodgers another chance to come back in from his collarbone injury and get out there and help his team win. And therefore, I think Dallas will have a fight on their hands. I think Matt Flynn will do enough to keep them in the game, and I think the running attack will do enough against Dallas, who didn't seem to be able to stop the run or the pass on Monday night. And my pro football stat for this one is another fun one. Green Bay, over their last six games, they're trying to turn into a terrible run defense. They've allowed over 1,000 yards in their last six games. If you can't run DeMarco Murray in this spot, I don't know what you're going to do. They should have ran him more on Monday night against another terrible run defense in the Chicago Bears. So maybe that's another reason to pick Green Bay to cover, because once again, Jason Garrett will get a chance to show how intelligent he is running the offense, he and Bill Callahan, by running DeMarco Murray to death against a terrible run defense. And once again, I think he's going to come up short in the mental department and not run them nearly as much as he should. So Dallas to win, but Green Bay to cover the number.
I agree. I believe that Jason Garrett does tend to overcoach. They came out running the ball up and down the field all over the Bears. Looked like it was going to be a shootout. And then all of a sudden, they got away from DeMarco Murray. Tony Romo started missing some passes. And the Cowboys are punting. And every time the Cowboys punted, the Bears went down and scored a touchdown. And it was rinse and repeat for most of the rest of that game until the fourth quarter. And the Cowboys decided, you know, the defense was loose. And all of a sudden, they got back to the running game. I mean, they're down so much. And they actually started running the ball again. And sure enough, it worked. So it was there the whole game for them. But I really think they overthought the whole thing and they outcoached themselves. And we know that the Cowboys are traditionally every year in competition for the dumbest team in football category. So I too, like you, have the Packers this week. Totally cemented it for me when Chris Collinsworth's man crush, the great Sean Lee, was ruled out for this game. It's like, oh, how can the Cowboys survive now? They're not going to have Sean.
Oh, no.
They're just going to completely crumble. Matt Flynn has shown that he can complete balls against bad pass defenses. I mean, he made millions of dollars off that game that he played against Detroit a few years ago before he left town and bounced around about half the league and then had some arm issues. But he did a in a really cold environment last week. He fairly shredded Atlanta's secondary, and Atlanta's not known as a good defensive unit. But the way Dallas looked on Monday night, I just don't know how they bounce back from that. I think the Packers, even though both teams, this is a playoff, very, very big playoff implications for both teams, but Packers can't lose any more games. And I think they've got that light, you know, that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, where even though it's become this Aaron Rodgers watch every week, he should make it back eventually. And if they can somehow pull this one out, they can get him for those last two games. And if they win this one, they can beat Pittsburgh and Detroit and win the division. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh and Chicago. I believe the last game is the Bears. So they actually have a path to the division title. They need Detroit to lose one game. And they win out, and they can win the title. But I'm sure the Bears have a very similar path, and I know the Lions are in the driver's seat. The Lions do need – they can do this too. But as far as trust goes, I trust Green Bay a little bit more than I trust Dallas, especially after what I watched on Monday night, which was – that wasn't even like practice squad defense. They didn't get after anybody. They didn't cover anybody. They made Luke McClown and Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey look like, you know, like the 99 Rams, 2000 Rams. I mean, it was crazy. Matt Forte, everybody on the Bears offense had one hell of a day. Cowboys defense is putrid. So I'm definitely taking the 6.5.
And that light at the end of the tunnel that you said for the Packers, that they can see a way to win that division somehow. Well, the Detroit Lions have to cooperate and continue their little collapse that they seem to be on. And that takes us to Monday night, where the Lions will be at home and Matt Elam and the Baltimore Ravens will be waiting for them. Matt Elam, of course, famous this week for calling Calvin Johnson old, which is laughable. But the 7-6 Ravens, the 7-6 Lions got a real, might be a physical matchup on Monday night. It should be a close game either way. The public likes Detroit. Baltimore gets 6 points at the Detroit Lions. Jason, what's your pick?
Well, I've got the Ravens here. Six seems like a big number. Although I will say, because you brought up the calling out of Calvin Johnson, that didn't go so well the last time somebody did that. I believe that was Dez Bryant who decided to say that he was going to be the best receiver on the field, and did Calvin Johnson go for 320 in that game? So
are you calling Megatron for 300 yards this week?
Maybe calling out Calvin Johnson wasn't the best move. But despite all that, the Lions, I called this a few weeks ago, and wow, has it ever come true that the Lions just cannot handle prosperity. You just can't give the Lions anything because they will just find a way to just completely shit the bed anytime you give them anything, like any prosperity. Give them the upper hand. Anything that helps them, they will find a way to ruin. This is just going to be another spot, big spot, Monday night football. Do I trust Harbaugh or do I trust Jim Schwartz? Do I trust Joe Flacco who's won a Super Bowl or do I trust Matthew Stafford? Everything says roll with the Ravens, even though, like you said, the betting public loves the Lions on this game. I'm not sold on that. I'm going to go with the Ravens. They are the proven commodity, even though they're having a rough year. Over the Lions, who just, another team always in contention for the stupidest team in football, and what a way to show it, but on Monday night.
The Lions are in contention for, completely, like you said, shitting the bed and pissing away a division in which their top two contenders in that division are both playing backup quarterbacks for significant parts of the year, and yet the Lions are finding ways to stumble down the stretch here. I got Baltimore to win this game, to go in there to Detroit and just win. Like you said, it's a big spot, and when do you see the Lions come through in big spots? It just doesn't happen. I really can't even remember the last time I saw the Detroit Lions play Monday Night Football. I know every team gets primetime action at some point during the year, but I really can't remember their last good primetime outing. And I don't think this is going to be any different. I think their cornerbacks are banged up, and that's bad news with Joe Flacco and Torrey Smith and Marlon Brown coming in, Jacoby Jones. I got a bad feeling about Baltimore lighting up the Detroit secondary in this one. Let me put a little fantasy mojo out there for myself in a league which I'm playing against a guy who had Rob Gronkowski on his team. And obviously will not be playing me in the playoffs this week. So the tight end that he decided to pick up is the great Dennis Pitta, which you actually guessed that out of thin air last week when I said, who you think this guy picked up? So, hey, scored a touchdown last week in his first game back from injury, 48 yards. Dennis Pitta, he's the man. He's going to have a great game. I just know it.
Did you just try to curse Dennis Pitta?
No, I love Dennis Pitta. I'm envious of that pickup. I think he's gonna have a great game. And my pro football focus stat for that game would be how Terrell Suggs is leading Baltimore with 54 quarterback pressure this year, and Matthew Stafford's quarterback rating under pressure is 56.7. I like Baltimore to get after Detroit. I think it's going to be a close game. But I think when it comes down to nut-crunching time in the end, you're going to see Matt Stafford crumble over under the pass rush and Joe Flacco step up and get the job done in Detroit.
Well, that was the highlight portion of our show. Andre's going to start us off for the rest of the picks in much less detail.
And we'll go up to New York, where Seattle might be visiting that stadium in New Jersey. It is actually where it's located. Might be going back for the Super Bowl, but they'll go to see the Giants on Sunday tomorrow. Seattle is a 7-point favorite up in New York, and even though this smells kind of pushy, I got to go ahead and trust Seattle more in this spot than the Giants, despite Seattle struggles on the road this year, I'm still not going to trust Eli Manning and the Giants, who have just been awful this year. Jason is going to take the Giants to cover that number. He says there may be weather issues, and he just never likes Seattle going east, and they're going to give the big number up there. Maybe with weather, he's going to trust the G-Men.
That scares you too, doesn't it?
Everything you do scares me right now.
Well, good. I'm in your head. I'm telling you. We're watching. The Bears this week are, well, it's a pick 'em. So the Bears this week are just a straight-up pick at Cleveland. We both like the Bears this week. The betting public or the popular opinion is on the Bears this week. They looked so incredible on Monday night that, well, what the hell. They just decided to go back to Jay Cutler. I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think they'll beat Cleveland with McClown. I think they'd beat him with Cutler. For everyone's sake, Cutler, please, please play well, because we need to really shut up all this McClown talk. So just for everyone's sanity, especially Andre's, please just have a good game, Jay.
We're begging you. Neither one of us think the Indianapolis Colts are on a good mojo tilt right now going into the playoffs. We do not like the Colts at all. That offense, those receivers, some of them are beat up, some of them are just bad. We're both going to take the Houston Texans to cover a 5-point spread at Indianapolis. Houston gets 5, and we like Houston. I like them to win straight up. That's how bad I think those receivers are. And I can't shake the image of what Houston had in Houston against Indianapolis on Sunday night when they had them beat at halftime, similar to what Miami had against New England. And Andre Johnson is lighting up the sky, 229 yards. I can't shake that thought. I think Houston is still a better team than their record indicates, and I think they're going to put it on Indianapolis tomorrow. Jason's not sold on that offense. Houston competes a lot. They don't seem to win, but Jason's going to take them to at least cover that number anyway.
Well, I'm going to roll once again with the hottest team in Florida. That would be your Jacksonville Jaguars, who are 4-1 in their last 5 games. They're a 2.5-point home favorite? What? Yeah, they're a favorite this week against. Oh no, they're a home dog.
Buffalo's favorite.
They're a home. You know, I can't even read. It's late. They are a home favorite. What? I'll go back to what I said. Against the Buffalo Bills, Andre's going to go with the Bills just because the Jags are too beat up. No Maurice Jones-Drew. No Cecil Shorts. Justin Blackman's been dead for 6 weeks now almost, so he's going to just roll with the Bills. I'm sticking with the Jaguars.
The Eagles go to Minnesota, and they give 6.5 points, their first road game in over a month, and they used to be the road warriors. They're 5-1 on the road this year, and they finally got it going at home, so me and Jason will take them to keep it going on the road. We'll both take the Eagles to cover that number. Jason says Adrian Peterson's all beat up, and that's their whole team, and he might not play tomorrow. Nick Foles and company have the inside track on the NFC East, and Jason's going to keep rolling with the Eagles. I completely concur. And the PFF stat on this one I really liked. LeSean McCoy, 51 missed tackles on running plays this year. Good for third in the league.
Well, Andre is definitely not sold on the great Mike Glennon, who's quarterbacking, of course, the second hottest team in Florida. That would be your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are a 5-point home dog this week against the San Francisco 49ers. Apparently, Mike Glennon stinks against the rush, so if you can just blitz his ass, he's going to give up the booty. San Francisco squash, we both agree.
Washington, the Real Housewives of D.C., that whole drama with Mike Shanahan, no RG3, it'll be Kirk Cousins going down to the Dirty South and going into Atlanta. Atlanta has the same record as Washington, 3-10, but Atlanta's a 6-point home favorite. Yeah, we're not buying that. We'll both take the Skins to cover that number. Jason says he's not taking Atlanta giving 6 against anybody. They'll probably lose the game. And Kirk Cousins probably be a step up over RG3 because of how bad RG3's been this year. And I agree with all of that so much that I'll take Washington to win.
Whoa, bold move there. We both love the Carolina Panthers at home this week hosting the New York Jets. 10-point favorite you'd think that'd be a big number for a team that's not the most offensively minded team in Carolina. I actually don't think the Jets are going to score in this game. So, you know, hey, 12-0, 14-0, that's a cover. And then, of course, when I asked Andre for his take on this game, all he could say is, and this is quotable, "Oh, God, Geno Smith."
Hey, he worked for me last week, but on the road, oh, God, Geno Smith. The Kansas City Chiefs are... Oh. The Kansas City Chiefs are all happy. They're all jacked up after Denver gave them a shot at the division title Thursday night. Kansas City still got an inside track at the AFC West title. They're 10-3. They go into Oakland. They give 5 points at the Raiders. And I still hate the Chiefs. I still think they're overrated. I got Oakland to kill them. No Dexter McCluster. No left tackle Brandon Albert. Oakland, top 10 in rushing yards allowed per rush. I think they hold down Jamal Charles. And I got Oakland to bring a big upset and beat the Chiefs. One of these days I'm going to be right about the Chiefs. At least I hope I will. Jason, of course, will take the Chiefs because they dominate bad teams. And that actually reminds me of my old bowling team. We used to call ourselves Chaos, K-A-O-S, for kick-ass on Sundays. That's what the Chiefs are doing so far this year, and Jason will take them and keep doing that.
Yes, they're also going to get fat on another backup quarterback. That's my prediction here. We both love the New Orleans Saints this week, 6-point road favorite at the Rams. Andre's buddies this week over at Pro Football Focus Yay Sports are giving every St. Louis defensive back a non-passing coverage grade. So basically it means their pass defense is shit. I don't need the stat to tell me that. All I know is Saints big, go Drew Brees, because I've got you this week in fantasy for the playoffs. So go Drew.
Arizona Cardinals minus 2.5 down at the Tennessee Titans, who basically played themselves out of a playoff berth after giving up the booty in Denver last week. And I'm still going to take the Tennessee Titans to win the game. I still got a bad feeling about interception Santa. He's still got that ouchy elbow, and Tennessee's got those physical cornerbacks. I think it's going to be a kind of a messy, ugly, low-scoring affair, and I think Tennessee's going to pull it off. And so does Jason. He's got Tennessee to spring the upset, competing hard all year against stiff competition. In Arizona, their good run that they've had, that's due to come to an end. So we both like the Titans.
Well, on Sunday night this week, if Chris Collinsworth has come out of his Sean Lee-induced catatonic state that there's going to be no Sean Lee this week, if he'll be able to call this game, he'll get to see the Pittsburgh Steelers, a 1.5-point home dog, hosting the Cincinnati Bengals. Andre is strictly playing a hunch, going with the old guys. You seem to love going with the old Steelers this year in some spots like this, but you think that the Steelers are going to come up big like one last time on prime time, this old bunch, and they're gonna surprise Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati here, this is their chance to show that they are the class of the division. I think they've already proved that a few times, but here's your chance in prime time. Go get it done. Win the game. All you got to do is win by two, guys. Don't win by ones. Win by two. And I believe Cincinnati is the better team, and they will prevail on Monday night. Just a tip here, because I was looking back through, because we are done. That is actually a Jacksonville plus 2.5 this week at home.
Yep.
Buffalo is minus 2.5 at Jacksonville. So Jacksonville is actually a home dog this week.
Yeah, I got you. I said Buffalo's favor. I think I got it in there somewhere.
Okay. I'm so confused on that game, so I'm just clarifying.
That's cool. I even got time to get my PFF stat in on the Pittsburgh game. Dre Kirkpatrick is going to have to take over at cornerback for Cincinnati because Terrence Newman is injured. He's been targeted 18 times this year. He's given up 13 receptions on those 18 targets for 187 yards and 2 touchdowns. Please play Antonio Brown in all of your fantasy. into our after show.
Well, we should definitely mention, and I did find it, I don't know if we mentioned it during the show, because that show just buzzes by, but for all the research that you did this week, you really, you know, dedicated yourself to the numbers and dedicated yourself to the stats, which is what, I mean, you do that normally anyways. You definitely had some different stats this week. You know, you went away from your old standbys, you know, sacks and yards per attempt. But it's funny that for all of the digging into the stats, we've agreed on more games this week than I think we have all season.
We're only different on five games tomorrow after all of that, but I take that as a positive because obviously if I was going against you in a lot of games, that's the kiss of death. If I differed on 9 or 10 games with you, that's no good because you'd win 8 of them. So I'm glad that we only differed on 5.
That's right. You want to win picks. You roll with me, that's right. You want to win the picks, you roll with me. I did want to bring up just a little bit about that San Diego-Denver game, not so much the game itself, but more of the coverage and the aftermath of that game, and just this whole over-exaggeration that everybody goes through and this overreaction that, you know, all of a sudden, oh, the Broncos lost a game at home and they looked bad and now they're shit. And they're going to be one and done in the playoffs. And Peyton Manning is terrible. And I think it was a combination of things. I think the Chargers had an incredible game plan. I think it was also one of those they had to execute it very well because if you want to play keep away, you know, you want to possess the ball for 40 minutes and you still want to be able to score points and not kick field goals, you have to be almost perfect. And I think the ultimate example of that would be was that Super Bowl 25, you know, when the Giants beat the Bills and held on to the ball for 41 minutes because every time the Bills got the ball, Jim Kelly's touchdown right down the field, and then all of a sudden then the Giants would come back and go on this 10-minute drive. And it's very hard to execute that kind of a game, and I think they actually benefited, San Diego did, from the Thursday night environment because we've talked about weird things are going to happen. They're going to happen on Thursday nights. But just the overreaction to Denver losing that game at home, it happens. Nobody's going to go undefeated. Denver is still a quality team, and San Diego's a better team than I think people give them credit for. They are the new England Patriots, by the way. But people just need to stop with the overreaction. After every single game, it's crazy. You know, nobody's going to win every game.
You know, there's a lot of money made on that overreaction. It's a cottage industry. There's so much post-game production from, oh, my God, now Peyton Manning is bad in the cold again. You know, what's going to happen in the playoffs? There's so much, you know, that goes into all of that. It is funny to watch from a distance, you know, as long as you know what you're watching. But some people take all of that as gospel and will run with it and make it and take it the next day and keep perpetrating it. That kind of reminds me of the Bears story with McCown and Cutler. And with every game that McCown had that was awesome, you know, that just kept furthering the propaganda from certain writers of, oh, boy, there's a controversy. There's a quarterback controversy between Jay Cutler and Josh McCown, except the players in the locker room didn't say anything about a controversy. Nobody expressed the opinion that McCown should keep starting over Cutler. The one person loosely associated with the Bears that expressed the opinion that McCown should stay in would be Brian Urlacher, who is a certified lunatic. And nobody should listen to anything he says. But as far as actual smart people go, nobody was saying that it should be McCown over Cutler. There was no controversy. There was never a controversy. Now, lots of web clicks happened, and lots of, you know, I would say lots of newspapers got sold, but nobody really buys newspapers anymore. But lots of attention was grabbed by furthering the controversy at quarterback, except for one small problem, that there never was a quarterback controversy.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check the tape. I know we covered this in some pretty good detail on Wednesday night's show, on the recap show, but I can't quite remember if it made it into the show, the whole thing that we went through, the whole exercise, or if it made it into the, you know, after we went off the air portion. where we went through all of the journeyman backup quarterbacks who've had a blaze of glory and then have gone on to do nothing beyond that small run of success. And that's where Josh McClown falls to me. I almost got his name right. God damn, I'm not going to do that. Almost. Not this time. Not going
to
do
that. I didn't mean to rehash it, but that just reminded me of another situation in which the media takes a narrative and makes a lot of attention out of it and makes a lot of stories out of it and ignores the fact that it actually doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense. But it's still a good story. It's still good copy.
Oh, sure. But, and of course, the point we made, Will, was that now that Cutler's back and it's firmly established that as long as he's healthy, he's going to be the quarterback, they're doing the right thing. So all these people who are trying to stir up controversy because it is good press and it's going to get you some run and it's going to give all the talking heads in the 24-hour news cycle something to talk about, it's not good football. It's good to talk about, but it's just not real. Matt Flynn goes out and throws 5 touchdowns tomorrow against Dallas, which is possible. I mean, look at what, Caden McClown did. If he can do that, nobody's still going to be like, you know what? Maybe they should start him against Pittsburgh, too, if that Aaron Rodgers is healthy. In fact, let's just do it the Mike Shanahan way. Let's just deactivate Aaron Rodgers completely.
You got to save him for next year.
To protect him, save him from himself. We don't need to worry about making the playoffs. We can go that whole route. There is so much mismanagement. I mean, you've got one coach who's trying to get himself fired just so he can collect $7 million. You've got another coach who's getting flack. I mean, Trestman is – the people are always he's really putting his neck out there by going back to Jay Cutler. We've gone over this. And this is no joke. We are both born and raised in Chicago. We're going to be getting 40 here in a couple of years. We'll be men. We'll be at 40. By the way,
we're a man. We're 40.
That is the best quarterback in our lifetime, and before that, their quarterbacks were. And it was hand off the ball, and maybe every once in a while you throw. Jay Cutler's the best quarterback that team has ever had from a talent standpoint. So they're doing the right thing, and people just need. There's so many things that people can just chill out, just back off a little bit, let this thing play out. We're coming up on the playoffs. That's where everything is going to shake out. But the perception that, if they start Cutler and the Bears lose and then they end up not making the playoffs, that this is going to somehow be this negative thing. Once again, can't win every game. I don't see them going into Cleveland. The only thing that scares me about Cleveland is that is a much different team. It's a good defensive team, but it's just a much different team when Brandon Whedon's not under center. I mean, they came a miracle comeback from the Patriots away from going into Foxborough and winning that game, which was just, I had the cover on that, but I didn't have them going in there and winning. They didn't, but still, that was just absolutely crazy the way that went down.
One more mention about the Bears and the whole McCown-Cutler thing. There's one quick brief mention is that we are scheduled to have Michael and Kaz from Football Fan Rush Radio on the show once again Wednesday. And Kaz has been on Twitter. She's one of them. She has been vocal about her desire to have Josh McCown and keep him around and maybe not so much Jay Cutler. Now, I'll definitely have to ask her and flesh that out and get the full detail on her opinion. Does she really think that Jay Cutler should be thrown aside and just completely kicked out? Or was she just advocating for Josh McCown to be the man as far as this season until he is no longer hot? Was she just advocating the hot hand? But one way or another, she was one of those that was all over the keep Josh McCown alive bandwagon. And now that Jay Cutler is back in, I'm sure it's going to be a very interesting show for them tomorrow morning, talking about leading up to the Bears-Cleveland game, and I'm sure it's going to be a very interesting result after the game. One way or another, it's going to be, once again, a lot of attention and a lot of page clicks and a lot of views for that whole situation, whether it's an actual controversy or not.
Yeah, I think one way or the other, that'll be a very entertaining recap show on Wednesday night. We had a good time last time they were on, so I don't suspect it'll be anything but informative and entertaining on Wednesday. This whole situation reminds me, and you know, and we are, if we don't pay attention to history, we are doomed to repeat it. But in Bears history, I'm not a Bears fan, but I lived in Chicago for so long. This reminds me a lot of the Steve Walsh, Eric Kramer year. Eric Kramer is nowhere near as good of a quarterback as Jay Cutler, but he was a better quarterback than Steve Walsh. But Walsh came in, Kramer was hurt, Walsh came in, won a whole bunch of games. They decided to roll with Walsh in the first game of the playoffs, and I believe they were playing the 49ers. And everybody knew that Walsh just couldn't make certain throws, and all they were doing were just slants, you know, just quick slants, quick throws, and San Francisco just crept up and crept up and crept up and completely smothered that passing offense. And by the time the Bears realized it, this is back in the Wannstedt years, Dave Wannstedt years, and by the time the Bears realized it, it was too late. And I think I think Trestman's a little smarter than that. He knows that he's got to go back to the guy that's got the talent, who's going to give him the chance to go to the playoffs, because McClown isn't that guy. He's hot at the moment, but he's not your long-term solution. He might not even be your short-term solution. Somebody had the balls on TV to compare that situation to the Alex Smith, Colin Kaepernick situation last year.
What?
The only thing that was involved, the only thing that's even closely, remotely involved to that is that they're all quarterbacks. And that's it. End of story. The only common thing is all four of those guys play the quarterback position. Nowhere even close. It's just stupid people who have a lot of airtime to fill who think that, well, we're just going to go to another situation where there was a quarterback change and talk about how similar these are. There's no corollary between Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick and that level of talent that he brought and the way he was changing the games to what you're getting with Cutler and McClown. It's just crazy. Yeah. People just shut up. So I don't
watch
one
of those guys plays. Which one of those guys plays the role of the 34-year-old quarterback that was coaching high school football last year and it's just and got brought in almost as a, you know, as a favor to him, is just, you know, just bringing in a warm body. But which one, the second-round pick Kaepernick or the number one overall pick Smith, which one of those guys plays that role in that scenario?
Yeah, the guy who got San Francisco to the championship game and damn near almost won that game if Kyle Williams didn't decide to go full retard and start dropping punts at the end of that game. And little movie reference there if anybody gets that. And then Kaepernick, who just goes out there and was running this pistol last year that nobody was ready for. People are more ready for it now. And then ends up taking that job and just, you know, just running with it. At the time that Alex Smith got benched, he was the highest rated quarterback in the league last year. So what the thing that Jim Harbaugh did that rode them all the way to the Super Bowl, that was ballsy. You know, that was guts. I mean, it was psycho. He is Coach Insane. But, it wasn't handled the best, but it was handled. But that was a completely different situation. Whether people agreed with it or not, the end result was, you know, hey, Alex Smith has now got his own team that's doing very well, although you don't believe in them at all. But they're getting the job done. They're doing their thing, and they're fine, and they'll roll into the playoffs here, and, you know, they'll possibly be one and done. But that's fine. We've talked about this before. There's a lot of teams that would be happy to go one and done in the playoffs. Are we playing for something right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess we didn't even get a chance to make this official during the regular part of the show, and we've got about a minute left here.
Yeah, I know. This broadcast is copyrighted. This will be our last Saturday show for the foreseeable future because of the Saturday regular season games and then the playoff games. We'll be doing all our picks on Friday night from this point forward for the rest of this season, at least until we get around the conference finals and the Super Bowl. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just look for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Our picks are up on the blog right now, inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. And you can email the show inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. And I am on Twitter @IMLBDre, and Jason's @IMLDJPG.